Thank you so much for joining us today. You're listening to Corrieton Cast, the official podcast of Corrieton Church. Loneliness is a modern epidemic, but this lesson is important for all of us. In today's episode, Dr. Rucky Ramsey speaks to loneliness. We'll start with some opening facts, then we'll look at people in the Bible who were lonely, and we'll end by looking at five steps to curing loneliness.
Loneliness. All of us have been there at some point or other. For some, though, it's a permanent address. Loneliness has been a universal problem since the time God created man, and then man sinned against God, and in so doing, he separated himself from God and from each other. So Adam and Eve were separated. It's interesting, the first thing God said about man after he created him was that it was not good for man to be alone. Loneliness, it's not a new issue. All the way back in 1973, Billy Graham was asked, what question are you asked the most? What topic are you asked the most about? And the answer to that was loneliness. Now, I'm a huge fan of the Beatles, especially the early years. The song She's Leaving Home is about a girl who's leaving home after living alone for so many years. One of my favorites of their songs, probably my first or second favorite, has no drums, no keyboards, no guitars. It's a song about the universal problem of loneliness. It's experienced by a fictitious priest and a woman who lives alone named Eleanor Rigby. The song's been recorded by more than 200 different artists, maybe the most recorded song in history, at least pop song. Recently, I saw an article on a news feed and then read several more because it perked my curiosity, and they were about what's called the loneliness epidemic. Long before the time of cable TV and smartphones, people used to sit and talk on porches, and they used to hang out with others at diners. Here in Knoxville, they'd get in their car and drive to Malcolm's Drive-In on Clinton Highway or Cardin's Drive-In out on Asheville Highway. When I was in high school, people would get in their cars and drive back and forth between Shoney's and McDonald's on Broadway. There used to be a Shakey's Pizza in Fountain City. It was kind of the place everybody would go. They played Spanking Our Gang, old Spanking Our Gang videos. And then later on, it was Pizza Hut on Clinton Highway. People did things together. If you watch TV, you only had three channels. And if you listened to your record player, you probably did so with other people. I'll never forget, my sister got a Beatle album, and my cousin and some other girls came over and they'd play that first album, Meet the Beatles, and I'll just cry like babies during the thing. Some of y'all remember that era. But you did it together. Back in those days, if you had a record player, they claimed that if you'd play a rock album backwards, you could hear the devil. How many of you heard that? And if you got a country music song and played it backwards, you'd get your wife or your dog back, one or the other. Kind of a miraculous. And then came cable TV with hundreds of channels. Then came the internet. Then came the smartphone. Then came social media, where you could have friends who really weren't friends, and where you could produce and live in your own reality show, wearing the face that you keep in the jar by the door. The speed of life doubled or tripled. We no longer have time to linger, hang out, and talk. Then came the COVID shutdowns, mask, isolation. It was the perfect storm. Mental health in America is probably at an all-time low. The evidence is seen in shootings, suicides, number of people medicated for depression. We got lonely, big pharma got rich. Obviously, the drug epidemic. People don't drink alcohol and do drugs because they feel so good. You do understand that, don't you? They're medicated. I was at the Cheddar's on Clinton Highway, and I went in, and they recommended a drink called the painkiller. I thought, how appropriate. Because that's exactly what people do at a bar. They go in to kill the pain. Ah, look at all the lonely people. Where do they all come from? Even though our population continues to grow, people are living more and more isolated and alone. A bunch of you don't know the family who lives two doors down from you. That's real common not to know even those people. When I grew up, we knew everybody all the way up and down the street. It's a different world, isn't it? Some of you remember the time when you had best friends that you probably talked to every day and you did something with at least once a week, probably several times. Very few of you have that anymore. And a lot of you never had those kinds of relationships. In those relationships, you knew that you mattered to somebody. Now the enemy can make you think that you don't. Friendships are all built around something that you have in common. Because of this, who your friends are can change over the course of a lifetime. When I was in high school, my friends were guys I played ball with. And then I went to UT, and when I was at UT, they were friends I went to church with. We played some ball together, we hung out. It was kind of more of a spiritual relationship. Then I went to seminary, and ended up with three pretty good friends there that we kind of revolved around golf. Two of them were very good, one of them was pretty good, and I was learning. But we had those relationships. I almost never see or talk to any of those people now. One of them's actually dead. If I met them now, they likely wouldn't be my close friends because what we would have in common has changed. Does this make sense? Betsy, on the other hand, has had two best friends since high school. They talk every week. They get together every couple of months. They take trips together. What they have used to be common. Now it's completely uncommon. If you have friends like that, you're part of a minuscule minority of people. Even though God created us for relationships, far too many of us are living isolated lives. You can be in church every Sunday. You can be around lots of people, but still be emotionally isolated. And the She's Leaving Home song, this girl lives with her family there. And they can't understand why she left, but she's leaving home after living alone in a home with her parents for so many years. Now, put some findings of a study that was done actually by the U.S. Surgeon General in your outline. They compared social trends in 2003 to 2020. So notice this is pre-COVID. It's right before COVID hit. So for that gives you some perspective. All these numbers would be greater now than they were then. So number one is social isolation is up by 24 hours a month. In 2020, people spent 24 hours more a month by themselves than they did in 2003. 24 hours. Number two, time with household and family is down. With household family is down 5 hours per month. We spend 5 hours less time with the people we live with under the same roof. Number three, doing things with others is down by 14 hours per month. We spend 14 hours less doing things with other people. Number four, engagement with friends is down by 20 hours per month. So we spend 20 hours less a month with friends than we used to spend in 2003. And then number five, time with non-household family is down by 5 hours a month. So this would be extended family that you don't live with. We spend 5 hours less a month with them. You see how these numbers are stacking? And then number six is engagement with others is down by 10 hours per month. Now, engagement with others can be the person at the grocery store, the person in the department store, the restaurant. With Amazon, DoorDash, nearly everybody selling online and delivering now, we can live our lives without connecting in any significant way with anybody else. A lady in the UK lived alone. Her parents had died. She had four sisters she was estranged from. Half of her rent was paid by some agency, kind of a welfare agency. After not paying her rent for over 2 years, the owners of the property got a legal order so they could break into the flat where she lived, which they did in 2006. She'd been dead for over 2 years. Her body was so decomposed, the only way they could identify her was the dental records. Her television had been on the entire time. a movie called Dreams of a Life was made about her in 2011. Ah, look at all the lonely people. Where do they all come from? Look at all the lonely people. Where do they all belong? One researcher wrote that loneliness occurs when the connections a person needs in life are greater than the connections a person has. So some people have a greater need for connection than others. For example, one might have a little connection, but that's all they need. It's enough. Somebody else might have a lot of connection, but it's not enough. So they still feel lonely. Another thing they discovered was that young people are far more likely to feel lonely than older people. Now think about that. A lot of these older people are living by themselves. There's nobody else around, but dog or cat, whatever. But they've learned how to live that way. And you got young people who don't know what to do. They also found that the more time you spend on social media, the more likely you are to feel lonely. Your smartphone is an inadequate substitution for real live people. It's an artificial medication that's actually hurting you while you're under the impression it's helping you. Loneliness is mental and it's emotional, but it takes a toll on us physically. In an article entitled Americans Are Lonely and It's Killing Us, one researcher is quoted as saying that loneliness is the equivalent of smoking 15 packs of cigarettes a day. It increases your risk of early death by 26%. It's a big deal, isn't it? Ecclesiastes 1:9 tells us there's nothing new under the sun. So let me give you some biblical examples of loneliness. I'm going to give you five types. Number one, first is the loneliness of isolation. The loneliness of isolation. This is one we think of most often. Elijah experienced the loneliness of isolation. He told God in 1 Kings 18:22 that he alone was left of all the prophets. He then proceeded to call down fire from heaven on Mount Carmel, kill the prophets of Baal. And then again in chapter 19, verse 10 and verse 14, he's alone. He's feeling sorry for himself. And he tells God that he alone is left. Public spiritual hero, lonely, felt all alone, felt like he had nobody. The loneliness of isolation. Number two, there's the loneliness of loss. The loneliness of loss. The person King David felt the most loved by was Jonathan, the son of Saul. In 2 Samuel chapter 1, verses 25 and 26, Samuel and Saul have both been killed in battle, and David mourns the loss of his best friend. I don't think he ever recovered from that loss. He married multiple women trying to fill this hole that Jonathan left. None of them filled it. I believe the reason he had the affair with Bathsheba in 2 Timothy chapter 11, verses 1 to 4, was a result of the loneliness he felt by the loss of Jonathan. Be careful not to do something stupid that would dishonor God, that would destroy your relationships with the people you love when you find yourself suffering loss. Said this a long time ago, when people hurt deeply enough and long enough, they will find relief. And so you'll either find something that's appropriate and legitimate to deal with that pain, or you'll do something inappropriate and illegitimate. You'll have an affair, you'll do something stupid, all kinds of things happen. Understand that when you're feeling lonely, you're vulnerable. And the enemy wants to pick you off and get you to do something you'll never get over, at least in your own mind. Be careful, the loneliness of loss. Number three is the loneliness of a broken self. The loneliness of a broken self. Now, what I'm about to say is really, really important. Sometimes our feelings of loneliness are completely internal. They have nothing to do with the people around us. They have to do with what's broken inside of us. We feel unloved, we feel unwanted, we feel alone, even with people around us. You can feel unloved when you really are loved. You can feel like you're alone when you're really not alone. You can feel like nobody cares when there's lots of people who really do care. If you're broken on the inside, people can't fix that. John Lennon, after the Beatles broke up, wrote a great reggae-type song. It says, one thing you can't hide is when you're crippled inside. You can comb your hair, you can put on a suit, you can go to church, but one thing you can't hide is when you're crippled inside. And this is exactly what he's talking about. Proverbs gives us a list of four things it says the world can't bear up under. I've put the last one in your outline. I think it's the last one of those four. Proverbs 30 verse 24 says, under an unloved woman when she gets a husband. If you feel unloved on the inside, nobody can make you feel loved from the outside. So no matter what this man does who marries this woman who feels unloved, it'll never be enough. He will knock himself dead to prove that he loves her, only for her to look at him one day and say, you don't even love me, do you? When you're broken on the inside, people can't fix that. People broken on the inside think, well, if I had a date or a mate, it would fix this. The loneliness in a marriage, I think, is greater than the loneliness of a single person. And if we're honest, every one of us who's married for any amount of time has felt that. I want to ask you to raise your hand because you might get an elbow. I don't know. But you felt that. You felt all alone. You got a wife, you got a husband, you even have kids. The survey found that one of the groups that felt the most lonely was the stay-at-home moms. So there again, I think, well, I'll get married and this man will fill this hole in me. He can't. Only God can fill that hole. And if you don't figure out how to let God fill that hole, you'll use the person you're married to try to fill it and then resent them for not being able to do it. And then when that doesn't work, you say, oh, what I need is kids. And the survey proved, and most married people know, that doesn't fill that hole either. And then you start using them to fill the hole. I'm going to get them in beauty pageants and cheer and ball and whatever else. And they'll be stars and I'll be whole. Probably no, they won't. And even if they are, no, you won't. One thing you can't hide is when you're crippled inside. When you're young, you can stuff all this down. I read a book on this years ago. But as you get older, it starts seeping out. When you're young, you can stuff it all down, keep it under wraps, and look like you're normal and healthy. But as you get older, you start to unravel. A bunch of you have seen people unravel. And you can't believe this is the person that you knew, thought you knew. It's stuff they had stuffed down that finally found its way out. The loneliness of a broken self. Number four, there's a loneliness of being out of God's will. The loneliness of being out of God's will. Jesus came to give us life. That life, the abundant life, is the obedient life. It's when we know Him, walk with Him, and obey Him. When we don't know Him, aren't walking with Him, aren't obeying Him, that life is missing in us. This will make more sense later. In Jonah chapter 4, verse 3 and 8, Jonah had been living outside of God's will. And in his case, if you recall, he wanted to die. Why? Loneliness. Now, this list is by no means exhaustive, but here's the fifth one. Last one I'm going to give you is the loneliness of leadership. The loneliness of leadership. If you're a leader, what I'm about to say, you're going to go, that is so true. Wow. Leadership has often been described as loneliness. People may respect and admire the boss, the owner, the person in charge, but he's not one of them. They know it, and he had better recognize it and accept it. At the place you work, there are two categories of people, the boss and everybody else. And you ain't him, and some of you resent that, and he ain't you. Leaders make decisions they're responsible to make. Many who are not responsible to make those decisions think they can make better decisions than he or she does. The leader's decisions get tested. When Coach Heffel calls a play, you immediately know if it worked or not, don't you? But see, people who aren't responsible think they could call all the plays and we'd be the national champs, right? That's why they pay you $0, because the University of Tennessee has that kind of confidence in you. And they pay him what? What's he making, $8 million now or something a year? I don't know what it is, a lot. I think it's a sin for anybody to make that kind of money, but a preacher, that's another story. Just kidding. The leader's decisions get tested. What others think would have happened if they'd done it their way never does. So people who aren't a leader can think they're right about stuff they're wrong about. They can think they're really smart and they're not, because their ideas never get put to the test. The loneliness of leadership got so bad for Moses that in Numbers 11, 14 to 15, he wanted to die. People tend to have short memories of what leaders do for them. They second-guessed how he led. They complained about everything that wasn't the way they wished it was. Moses had nobody who could relate to that. He had nobody who could understand what he was going through. He had nobody who carried that kind of burden. Every leader knows that loneliness. Now turn your outline over. Let's talk about what to do about loneliness. What do you do about loneliness? Understand there's scores of books and hundreds of articles written about this subject, probably doctoral dissertations. I'll not even begin to say all there is to say, but hopefully I can give you a biblical plan of action. This is how you take care of your soul. See, loneliness is an issue of the soul. I think I've got five things for you. Number one, first of all, is physically replenish. Physically replenish. I put in your outline, get some rest. The first thing God wanted Elijah to do when he was was to physically replenish. We see God's prescription for him in 1 Kings 19, verses 5 to 8. Elijah was physically and emotionally exhausted. Oftentimes, the devil comes after a big high. You have this adrenaline rush, you're flying sky high, and then the bottom drops out. Years ago, we used to have people come in for revivals. This is when church ran 300. And we had the top people in the country. We were getting people that churches had to run 1,000 or something to get them, but we were getting them. They would come in for Sunday morning through Wednesday night, and we gave them a $10,000 love offering. Bill Stafford, many of you remember, was the first one. So Bill came. I mean, I'm so excited to have this guy here, and I'm just floating around the whole 5 days he's here, you know, kind of thing. It was a great week, and I'm just riding on a high. And he left, and I crashed. And I'll never forget, at that time the church didn't pay me much of anything. And I'll never forget that somebody called me and said, Brother Rocky, so-and-so's in the hospital. Could you go see him? And I would say, won't you let Bill Stafford go see him? He's the one who gets all the money around here. That's exactly what I felt. Came down off the high. So when you're on a real low, you're vulnerable. When you're on a real high, you're about to be. After things are so great, Elijah just called fire down from heaven. That didn't just burn up the offering, it burned up the rocks. He just killed all the prophets of Baal. And he's lonely, feels all alone, would like to die. Physical exhaustion always leads to emotional problems. Elijah didn't need a Bible study. He needed to sleep and eat. Listen closely. You can't do everything. Number two, God doesn't expect you to do everything. Number three, as you age, you realize that almost nothing's that important. Almost nothing. When you're young, you think everything's important. The whole world will change if I do this or don't do that. I got news for you. You're going to get the experience eventually. It won't. that going undone really isn't going to change your life much, or doing this, wearing yourself out to get that done, isn't really going to change your life much. This afternoon, I'm going to do something really spiritual. I'm going to have a good lunch and take a nap. It's biblical. When you get physically exhausted, it'll eventually emotionally harm you, and then it will spiritually harm you. There's more to life than increasing its speed. If you win the rat race, you're still just a rat. Our country's run by a lot of rich rats, isn't it? This is why God gave Israel the Sabbath, Shabbat. Man is capable of running hard, working hard, but he's got to stop and refill the tank. And in our day, when you can work 24/7, even just from your phone, we don't stop. So we wear ourselves out. And we're doing all this important stuff, work. Let me tell you something. One of these days, I'll be through here, and I'm hoping to go 50 now, so that gives me about 10 and a half more. One day, I'll be through, and about 2 weeks later, they're going to say, Rocky Who's? You remember Rocky? Rocky who? Oh, that guy was here for 50 years. Oh, him, yeah. Yeah, whatever happened to him? One of these days, you're going to look in the paper, and you're going to see my picture there, and there are going to be some flowery things about, said about me, and I'm dead and gone. Some of you are throwing your lives away to keep the wrong people happy. You're investing yourself in things and money while your marriage and your kids and your grandkids do without what they ought to be getting from you. Get out of the rat race. If you win it, you're just a rat. So physically replenish. Here's the second thing you need to do. Individually act. Individually act. Put in your outline. Do something. Do something. You were made to do something. Ephesians 2:10 says, before you were born, God already had the works laid out he wanted you to do. How can you feel good about yourself when you do nothing? I put two statements in your outline. I learned these 50 years ago. 50 years ago. Here's the first one. The idle mind is the devil's workshop. When you're sitting around with nothing to do and nothing to think about, guess who's showing up? Poor old you. Nobody loves you. Nobody cares about you. Well, God doesn't even love you. If he loved you, you'd be happier in this. And on it goes. The other is this. The devil tempts all other men, but idle men tempt the devil. Do something. Doing nothing makes you a sitting duck for the enemy. Here's one of the things, there are a few things I'll never forget in my childhood. Here's one of them. My dad died when I was 4 and a half. We were poor. My mom drove a bus for special needs kids. Later, she worked as an assistant for special needs kids. We had a neighbor who was a stay-at-home mom with a working husband. Our life was really hard. Theirs wasn't. Eventually, that neighbor had what was called a nervous breakdown. I'll never forget my mom saying this. She said this, I don't have time for a nervous breakdown. And she didn't. She had 3 mouths to feed besides her own. She didn't have time to whine, to complain, to collapse. She had life. She had something she had to do. She had a mission. She had to save these kids. Do something. Doing something. The stress of all she had to do turned out to be healthier for her than the nothing that her neighbor had to do. Isn't that fascinating? The devil preys on people who do nothing and have nothing to do. I've known people over the years who would have been fine if they'd just gotten a life. They do nothing. Get a life. Do something. Get involved in something. Have something bigger to think about than your own navel, okay? They had something to do. They have something to get up for. They have something to think about. You'll see in 1 Kings 19:16 that God gave Elijah something to do. I'll tell you what that is shortly. So physically replenish, individually act, do something, get a life. We derive so much of our self-worth, sense of worth, from what we do. I'm going to say this twice. If you don't feel good, very good about yourself, do something that would make you feel really good about yourself. Isn't that simple? If you don't feel very good about yourself, and there's scores of you like that, go do something that make you feel really good about yourself. And by the way, what that is not something that serves you. It'd be something that serves other people. Happiness is one of those things, if you seek it, you'll never find it. Happiness is something that comes upon you while you're living a good life. It's not the goal, it's a result. Physically replenish, individually act. Number three, relationally connect. Relationally connect. I put in your outline. Pursue friendships. And here's what you're saying. I've tried. Everybody in this room has tried to have a relationship that didn't work. Right? Every one of us. We wanted to date somebody, didn't want to date us. We wanted to be friends with somebody who we didn't fit in their circle. Right? Every one of us. I can't imagine there's one person here who everybody they wanted to date him. Anybody they wanted to marry him. Everybody they wanted to be friends with wanted to be their best friend. So you say, well, I've tried to, nobody wants to date me. Welcome to the human race. Well, I tried to be friends with them and they weren't friends back. Welcome to the human race. That's not unusual. It's pretty normal for all of us. Somebody has to be the pursuer. Sometimes somebody always has to make the first move. They may have to make several of the first moves. They may have to make most all the moves. I put this in your outline. You seek to pick your friends, but they pick you. You seek to pick your friends, but they pick you. You don't have power over who your friends will be. They do. That make sense? I didn't have the power over whether Betsy would marry me. She did. Right? It doesn't matter how much I want to marry her. Doesn't matter how much I think she ought to marry me. The decision was hers. Same thing with a friend. You can do everything you can to establish a friendship, but the power lies with them. You're trying to pick them, but ultimately they have to pick you. One of the best things you can do is ask people for help. Could you help me with this? It makes the person you ask feel wanted, feel needed. That's a good thing. And people, when we help people, serve people, we feel good about it. It makes us feel good about ourselves. God wired us up that way. So it's a great way to try to initiate relationships. Hey, I'm trying to do this and I don't know how. I think you do. Is there any way you could help me? Most people are glad to let you know what they can do or what they know that you don't know. You also need to be aware that nobody connects with everybody. Nobody connects with everybody. We usually connect with others because of something in common. There are some people who likely would not want to be my close friend. And there are a lot of people that I would not want to be close friends with them. There are people you want to date, there are people you don't want to date. So don't think it's shocking if somebody doesn't want to date you or doesn't want to be your friend. Make sense? You feel the same way, just about different people. Don't allow rejection to get you down. I've said this already, but I'll say it again. We've all wanted to be closer to some people than they wanted to be to us. Every one of us, we've wanted to be closer to some people than they wanted to be to us. Am I in the right room? Every relationship has a pursuer. Look at 1 Samuel 18:1. The soul of Jonathan was knit to the soul of David, and Jonathan loved him as himself. Now you can go to 1 Samuel 18:3 and chapter 10, verse 17. Both of them say exactly the same thing. It never says that David loved Jonathan as himself. Every time, Jonathan loved David as himself. Jonathan was the clear pursuer in this relationship. Now back to Elijah. One of the things God told Elijah to do was to relationally connect with a young prophet-to-be named Elisha. And sure enough, he did. Look at 1 Kings 19. You can read about it in verse 16, verses 19 to 21. It says, Elisha followed Elijah and ministered to him. So physically replenish, individually act, relationally connect, be around people, get involved with a team or a group, volunteer somewhere with somebody, join a workout group. There's all kinds of things you can go be a part of. Betsy's mom's 90 years old. She's a part of a water aerobics class at a place in Lebanon. On her 90th birthday, she had three surprise birthday parties. One of them was at the aerobics class. And all the women talked about how wonderful she is. You know what? She wouldn't know. She might not know one of those women if she wasn't a part of that aerobics class. Not one of them. Some of you have nobody in your life because that's what you've chosen. Don't think you can sit in the corner and pray for God to send a friend around or a mate around. He's not going to do it. If you remember Ruth was trying to find her a man, and she went and laid in his field. That's kind of weird for us today, but it wasn't back then. And it worked. She found him, made herself available. Here's the fourth thing. Personally develop. Personally develop. This has to do with a broken self. The concept of self-worth is a big deal in our day. Listen closely. This is genius. If you want to have self-worth, make yourself worth something. If you want to have self-worth, make yourself worth something. Feeling good about yourself is not something conferred. I feel bad about myself. I feel alone. I feel like nobody likes me. Somebody can't come by with a magic wand and say, "Be thou liked." Poof! And all of a sudden, it's all different. You know how you feel better about yourself? You do something to feel better about yourself. People who feel real good about themselves do a whole lot of things to feel real good about themselves. And people who don't feel good about themselves do almost nothing to feel good about themselves. Do something that makes you like yourself. If you don't like the person you see in the mirror, get a new mirror. Just trying to see if you're paying attention. Change the person you're looking at. Change who you are. You know, you can't change your mate. We spend all of our energy trying to do that, but you can change yourself. You can't change your adult kids. You can change yourself. But the devil distracts us trying to change everybody else as if they change, all would be well with our soul. Not true. Change yourself. If you don't like you, why should anybody else like you? If you're not doing something that makes you worth something, why should anybody else want in on that? Learn something. Learn a skill. Learn a knowledge. Do something for somebody. Learn to develop personally. Do the things you need to do to have a proper sense of pride about yourself. Become somebody that people would like to be with. If we don't properly love ourselves, like the woman back in the Proverbs verse, 30 verse 23, then we can't receive love from others. So that what that verse tells us is, no matter what this guy does, she still will feel unloved. And if we don't love ourselves, we can't properly love others. Look at Matthew 22, 39, the second greatest commandment. You shall love your neighbor. It's not what it says, is it? You shall love your neighbor as yourself. Well, if you don't like yourself, you can't really love like your neighbor. Can't love your neighbor if you don't love yourself. If I properly love me, I can properly love you, and I can believe that you love me. For a long part of my life, I could not believe anybody would love me because I didn't have a proper sense of love for myself. And if I don't love myself, whatever you do, it won't be enough to make me feel loved. If I don't love myself, I can't really use you. Instead, I can't really love you. I'm going to use you to fill up this hole inside of me. So sadly, that's what, see, a marriage, I was talking to people about this last night. In biblical marriage, 1 + 1 = 1, right? The two become one flesh. Half plus half equals half. Two broken people don't have a whole marriage. They have a broken marriage. The marriage gets better when they get better. So everything you can do to improve yourself, you improve your marriage. So we need to develop ourselves. Be somebody somebody wants to be with. If I don't, you know, what we ought to have in most of our weddings now, it ought to be two people up there and the guy looks at, you know, they're doing the wedding vows. I've written my own vows. Here's the deal. I feel real empty inside and I'm betting you can fill it up. That's why I'm here today. And I'm expecting you to fill up this empty spot. And if you don't fill it up, I'm eventually going to resent you for it. And I'm probably going to try to find somebody else who think I can fill it up because you can't. Those would be some real honest marriage vows. It ought to be two people who are full in themselves, who have the kind of relationship with Jesus, they don't have to get married. They might like to, they might prefer to, but they don't have to. Their life is not going to be about their marriage. If they get married, it's going to be about Him. So now you got two full people who are going to get married and spill on each other. That's what biblical marriage ought to look like. So now I can love you because I'm not so desperate for you to do something for me, and vice versa. Physically replenish, individually act, relationally connect, personally develop, and then number five, spiritually engage. Spiritually engage. Earlier I talked about doing something. To spiritually engage is to do something that matters. I mean, if you're doing nothing, do something. Mow the lawn. Take your cat for a walk. Do something. But if you really want to be whole and well, do something that matters. So how did God spiritually engage Elijah? Number one under that, Elijah anointed a king. That mattered. He anointed a guy named Jehu who drove his chariot furiously. Jehu is eventually the man who brought about the death of Jezebel. He goes into a town where she's hiding. She's up in a tower. One of my seminary professors, my Old Testament survey professor, was real country and real smart. And he told the story and he said, here's what happened. He said, Jehu came down from the bottom of that tower. There's some other people in that tower. And he looked up there and said, whoever's for Jehu, chunk old Jezebel down here. And sure enough, they chunked her. And she hit the ground and he ran over back and forth with his chariot till he had basically demolished her body. As was prophesied earlier, the dogs came and ate everything but the hands that did so much evil, the skull that devised so much evil, and the feet that ran to evil. All the rest the dogs ate. Some of you thinking, that's cool. Some of you think, I'm going to throw up. Whatever. Read your Bible. It's a real interesting book. Elijah did something that mattered. He anointed a king. Number two, Elijah mentored a prophet. He would spend the rest of his days mentoring Elisha. 1 Kings 19:16, Elisha you shall anoint as prophet in your place. So he begins to mentor Elisha. Before it's all said and done, Elisha gets a double portion of his power. Elijah raised somebody from the dead. Elisha raised somebody from the dead. Elisha was dead in a grave that got opened up and they threw a dead body on his bones and his dead body raised that person from the dead. They came back to life when they hit his dead bones. Now I'm telling you, that's the power. Elisha had that. So when Elijah was gone, there was somebody as capable as he was. That mattered. When you're making a difference, you're feeling good about yourself. Now, I want you to write this down somewhere. Your life matters to the degree that it makes a difference in someone else's. Your life matters to the degree that it makes a difference in someone else's. People like you for what you do for them. They love you for what you do for them. If you do nothing for people, nobody's going to care. You do a lot for people, you'll have all kinds of people who care. Your life matters to the degree that it makes a difference in somebody else's. If I'm not making a difference in anybody else's life, what's it matter if I die? When I die, guess what? The world's lost. Nothing. Just another mouth to feed. Just another crazy guy who drives like Jehu, you know, whatever. But if I'm making a difference in people's lives and people's marriages and parenting and all these other things are better because of what I'm trying to do, I leave a gaping hole. There's a lot of people got a good reason to cry at my funeral. Your life matters to the degree that it makes a difference in someone else's. So you want your life to matter? Go help people. Go do things for people. If you're a believer, you're never alone. Jesus is always with you because he's always in you. You might feel like he's not there, but he is. That's why the Bible says we don't walk by sight, but by faith. I feel like he's not here. I know he is. How do you know he is? Because he said that he was, and he never lies. He's a God of truth. It's impossible for him to lie, the Bible says. When the word says that he'll always be with you, he will. When the word says he'll never forsake you, he won't. Will you feel like he's with you all the time? No. Will you feel like he has forsaken you at some times? Yes, but he has not. He's still with you. Your fickle emotions are not actual reality. Do you realize that you can feel lonely and God is with you, but you still feel lonely? Start with developing yourself. Think of things you can do that will make you like you more, and do those things. Obeying him will make you like you more. Disobedience to the Christian always makes the Christian like himself less. So some of you can fix a whole lot of stuff with that right there. Get out of hiding and get involved with people. Get in a community group. We beg and plead. And some of you still have never done that. You say, well, I don't really need that. If you're the kind of person who doesn't need that, can I tell you something? They really need you. If you're so full and you got so together with Jesus and life and all the rest, a bunch of people need to know how you did that and what you have to offer. So don't be selfish and rob them of that. If I don't become who I ought to be, I rob you of what you're supposed to get. If I don't do what I ought to do, I rob you of what God wanted to do for you. And when you isolate yourself and live for yourself and say, I'm going to just do what I want to do and I'm not going to do any of that kind of stuff there, you're robbing people of the reason God brought you here. I can't be any more plain than that. Become involved in a ministry. Go on a mission trip. Make yourself available for some relationships to begin and develop. You may be a single lady here, and you really wished you were married, and you really wished you had kids. Get involved in our children's or preschool ministries. Over the course of years, you could enjoy hundreds of kids. You could influence hundreds of kids with the added bonus, you don't have to take them home. And that's a big deal. Listen, I'm through. People like you because of what you do for them. You may think they like you because of who you are. I'm just the stuff. They don't. They could care less what stuff you are. Everybody you like because they do something for you. And everybody likes you because you do something for them. Now, don't be so insecure and desperate that you smother people. How many of you have ever been smothered by somebody? You know, and then you're hiding from them. You know, they want to be your friend and they want to, you know, they all of a sudden they call you five times a day and everywhere you go, they think they're supposed to be there. They get their feelings hurt if they didn't get invited. Some of you know what I'm talking about. If you're one of those, it's no secret why you don't have friends. You can't smother people. It's kind of like holding something that's really greasy. If you'll hold it lightly, you can hold it. But if you try to really grip it, it's gone. You can't hang on to it. Same thing with friendships. When you do things for others, they tend to want to do things for you. Remember that the next time you feel lonely, if you're a believer, you are not alone. You might feel that way, but you're not. Jesus is right there. And remember that one day, on the other side of death or the rapture, you'll never be lonely again.
You've just heard Dr. Rocky Ramsey's sermon on loneliness, so now we hope that you'll physically replenish, individually act, connect with others, develop yourself, and spiritually engage. If you haven't been to church in a while because of some level of hurt you've experienced at church, we completely understand. So we would like to invite you to come heal and return to the Lord's community with us. And why don't you start this Sunday? Go to CorrytonChurch.com to plan your visit. That's CorryTonChurch.com to plan your visit today.